culture, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman. And before we get started today, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone out there for your continued love and support for Fed Up. I know we are only scratching the surface in regards to Fed Up's reach to the federal employees out there, but I believe we can make a difference, can create change, and together we will do just that. Now today, I'm solo. There's no guests in the show. And the reason being is I wanted to talk about something that most of us, if not all, deal with at some point in our careers as a federal employee, and that's mental illness, disorder, or disease, which again can be caused by the toxic and hostile work environments and culture that we work in, which again is knowingly and willfully created, promoted, and committed mostly from management. Some of the most common mental disorders or mental illnesses include extreme stress, anxiety, depression, panic attacks, all of which could fall under the umbrella of PTSD, which as far as I'm concerned, in its own right, is one of the biggest mental illnesses of them all. I feel this is one of the many issues we deal with as federal employees, and because we are federal employees, I also feel like that makes it worse for us, especially if you are a USPS employee. Now listen, speaking of United States Postal Service employees, I know that FedUp only has Postal Service employees on at this point, but I want to be clear here. I have spoken to many other federal employees across this country who are not employed by the Postal Service. People from the IRS, TSA, bank examiners, veterans, to name a few. And I just wanted to say that while postal employees are the only ones coming forward right now with their stories, to all other federal employees and union members out there, FedUp is here for when you are ready to share your story, your issues, and your frustrations as well. As I said before, this platform is open to all federal employees. After all, a lot of us share common issues no matter what federal agency we work in or what federal union we are a part of. Now, having said that, ever since I have been helping you all across this country with your issues, especially those of you who were injured on a job, which ironically, when that happens, we're more likely to experience some type of mental illness or disorder immediately following a physical injury sustained while on duty in the performance of our work. But throughout the past years in helping you all, I have come to learn that we all, including myself, have experienced this. Now, there's a reason why we say that the most painful thing isn't the injury, it's the process we go through after that injury that hurts the most. Well, that includes any mental issues we sustain as well. Some of us don't even know it. We never got diagnosed with any mental disorder or illness, mainly because we never sought out help for the way we were feeling or because we were, you know, bottling everything up, you know, especially us men, right? Which is bullshit, by the way. We need to talk about shit and see someone if necessary. And those of us who have suffered from one and have even received a diagnosis and sought out that help, we're still paying for that out of our own dime, out of our own pockets. There are a few of you that I know personally who have filed a claim with the Department of Labor, OWCP, and have gotten your claims accepted, meaning all your medication and treatment is paid for, and some have received OPM federal disability even. But regardless, whichever one of these people you may be, I wanted to talk about this and share some things that we all can do to help us and also start holding management accountable and spreading awareness by using the resources we have at our disposal. Also, it's important not only to me, but somewhere out there right now, one of you are going through something and needs to hear what is being talked about in this episode as well. Now, before I get started, I just wanted to say that I am not a doctor. I have no medical degree and am not diagnosing anyone here. I'm not a lawyer. I don't have a law degree and I'm not giving legal advice to anyone. And the information I share in this episode, I am either getting from a few different websites of law firms or other sources online, and also from some of you personally out there who I've spoken to regarding your own experiences with one or more mental disorders or illnesses that you have been diagnosed with while on the job, caused by management and the toxic and hostile work environment, including what you did to get your claim accepted with the Department of Labor and OWCP. Also, there's some common sense thrown in here as well. But in saying that, I still want each and every one of you out there to do your due diligence, do your own research in order to help you make the best informed decision for yourself regarding your own situation. Also, I am speaking from the point of view as a retired United States Postal Service employee, but that doesn't mean that what I'm saying cannot be applied to other federal employees as well. In fact, when it comes to Department of Labor and OWCP and any on-the-job injury, the process is the same across the board. Having said all that, how many of you have been harassed, bullied, disrespected, threatened, or even had any aggressive action, whether it be physical or verbal, done to you from management, especially in front of others? How many of you dread going into work the next day or can't enjoy your day off or being with your loved ones because what is going on at work, meaning you are taking work home with you? How many of you can't function like you once did prior to any of the above happening to you? How many of you are not the same person you once were before? Chances are you were and still are exposed to a stressful environment, more than likely a toxic and hostile one to be more specific. Stress can affect every facet of our lives, particularly our overall health and well-being. As federal employees, we are subjected to an unusual amount of stress, from difficult supervisors to demanding customers, as well as tough routes and long hours, and can be put into extremely stressful conditions and or situations, especially when we are constantly forced to work in a toxic and hostile work environment over and over and over. After some time spent toughing it out, even the best of us can be brought to the brink of a nervous breakdown. Physical injuries are tangible and are relatively easy to explain to family, coworkers, supervisors, and sometimes even to the Department of Labor and OWCP, right? But mental and emotional disorders are a different story entirely. With physical injuries, most of the time we can see the injury. But with mental conditions, disorders, or illnesses, they can be much harder to believe because for the most part, we cannot physically see them. And this plays a part into that mistreatment from management, which can make an already toxic and hostile work environment that much worse for us federal employees. See, mental and emotional disorders are common and widespread. An estimated 56 million Americans suffer from some form of a mental disorder within a given year. Even though mental disorders are often just as debilitating as a physical condition, patients often face unfair scrutiny. Unlike physical ailments, which symptoms may appear obvious to the outside world, again, mental and emotional conditions affect the mind and can be difficult for others to understand. For this reason, mental and emotional disorders are stigmatized in the U.S., which obviously a lot of you already know from the mistreatment you deal with from your management and or your agency, and as you can hear as well through the people who share their story here on Fed Up. A big episode to listen to is episode 14 with regards to an SDO. Go back and listen to that episode. Listen to their story and how they overcame all this, but are still dealing with it today. But still held management and their agency, the United States Postal Service in this case, responsible for everything they've been through. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to be difficult to do everything that they did because of the amount of stress the process alone puts on us to begin with. But if you want to help yourself and deal with everything you are going through and hold the people responsible accountable, then you gotta be willing to do your part. So many federal workers aren't even aware that they can file an OWCP stress claim for a mental condition. If the stress of your daily work activity causes and or aggravates a pre-existing mental or emotional condition, such as anxiety, depression, PTSD, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. You have every right to receive federal workers' compensation. And let me be clear here. You should file a claim for said conditions, which we will talk about later here, especially when a professional has diagnosed you with a mental disorder or illness, and that mental disorder or illness can be linked to the job, meaning the fact of injury, performance of duty, and causal relationship, which are three of the five basic elements needed to get a claim accepted, by the way, can be proven and stated by the professional treating you. Again, these conditions can be covered through OWCP. And I want to get into what we need to do as federal employees in a moment. But first, I also want to point out that the mental and emotional illnesses or disorders present an unfair stigma. In fact, an article from the National Institute of Health describes how mental health patients have to cope with both their medical affliction and with the resulting stereotypes caused by misconceptions of a mental illness or disorder. According to the report, the public stigma of mental illness tends to fall under one of the following three categories. That first category is fear and exclusion, meaning persons with severe mental illness should be feared and therefore be kept out of most communities, right? This carries over to our workplace. As you will see, management treating you differently in a negative way, yelling at you, giving you more work, not giving you the same dignity and respect as others, which is preferential treatment. Maybe they single you out more, or maybe they just flat out ignore you. Bottom line is they are treating you differently because of your mental disorder or illness that they helped cause, by the way, which can also be harassment, bullying, retaliation. You see where I'm going with this? If you have a great union representation, they should be able to help you with filing a grievance for that. But we'll talk more on that later. But the second category here is authoritarianism, meaning persons with severe mental illness are irresponsible. So life's decisions should be made by others. Well, again, this can carry over to the workplace and cause more stress from mistreatment of management and others in that toxic and hostile workplace. The third one is benevolence, meaning persons with severe mental illness, they're childlike and need to be cared for. Again, this can carry over to the workplace and be seen through management's mistreatment of you, and again, could cause or trigger more stress for you. These are but a few of the stereotypes and stigmas that accompany any mental disorder or illness. And again, all this unfortunately can carry over into the workplace, causing patients, us employees, to experience social isolation, which can hinder treatment efforts. So not only are we having to deal with the toxic and hostile culture and environment at work, which again can be caused by management most of the time, but we also have to deal with the outside stigma and stereotype issues from loved ones, friends, neighbors, and even our own communities because of the diagnosis we have, which again is caused by management and or the agency we work for. You could even argue that even some of our union's lack of representation is a factor as well. But my point is that there is an event that started it all, which turned into many events at work that are the main factors in your diagnosis. And if a professional gives that as their own professional opinion, why not hold management accountable and have someone else pay for your treatment and/or medication rather than paying for it yourself? Also, accountability, y'all. We got to hold these motherfuckers accountable for what they're doing to us. Now, these cases can be fairly complicated, and federal workers should think about speaking with an experienced attorney before moving forward with their claim. It's not necessary to speak with an attorney, as some of you have gotten accepted claims without an attorney, but a free consultation wouldn't hurt is all I'm saying. The choice is yours. But if you are good enough to do this on your own, you have the knowledge and educated yourself, and you have the help of your doctor who's treating you, then by all means, do that. I am only presenting talking with an attorney regarding stress, mental or emotional claims if you do not feel you can get it done by yourself. Just do your due diligence, as I said before, but just know that a claim can help you weather the storms of life. If you feel that you need to step back for a bit due to stress-related complications, so you are able to give your job as a postal worker or wherever you position you are and whatever agency you work for, your very best. More importantly, though, to give yourself the help you need to take care of yourself and to get back as close as you can to leading a normal life once again. Now, I know some of you may be saying, well, Ron, how do I do that? And asking questions like, well, what are my options when I'm going through something like this? How do I hold management and/or my agency accountable? Where and how do I file a claim? What kind of claim? Well, let's try and answer some of these questions. First of all, and I know I'm going to sound like management when I say this here, right? Especially when we're sitting there in a PDI, but there is EAP, the Employee Assistance Program, for all federal employees and their family members. In addition to information on issues that affect workplace and personal lives, it also offers provider and benefit information. The program offers free, voluntary, and confidential assistance to employees and their family members with virtually any personal, job, or family problem. All you need to do is make a call. Now, if you're a USPS employee, that number is 1-800-327-4968. Professional counselors are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for you. Keep in mind, though, that this service is only for active USPS employees. Again, only for active USPS employees. If you are any other federal agency, there may be a separate number for you to call. So please ask your union rep or management for the number if you want, or Google your agency's EAP number and website, and it should give you the number that you need to call, as each agency's number differs. But I would say to start there. It may or may not help, but if it helps you and it may be free to you, then by all means, use it. Also, whenever you go through shit that is affecting your well-being and overall health, something like this in regards to a mental illness or disorder, any kind of mistreatment, especially that which is ongoing, document everything. As I said before in my intro episode, documentation is the key to anything. What was said verbatim, who was there and witnessed it, can you get a witness statement? What time it was, what day of the week it is, where it took place. Was it your regular scheduled day to work, or did you come in on your day off to work? Is this connected to anything else? Meaning, has this been ongoing from another incident? I think you get the picture here, but document everything. This is useful for grievances that your union may be able to file, and brings me to another avenue, which also creates a documented trail of the mistreatment for management, or anyone else for that matter. And that is filing an EEO as long as you meet the requirements to do so. And in this case, relating to a mental disorder caused by your employer or management, I'd say you meet the requirements because discrimination to your disability meets the requirement needed to file an EEO. Just remember, you have 45 days to file an EEO complaint from the said date of the misconduct happening. Again, in this case, it would be the discrimination towards your disability. Again, the disability being your diagnosed mental disorder or illness. Now, if you didn't get a diagnosed condition before filing this, then I'd look for another reason to file an EEO, if you can. This way, you can still bring up the willful misconduct. So once you do get a diagnosed mental disorder or illness from the professional you are seeing, it can be connected later on. Again, it's all about the documentation trail here. But as I said, you got to do your due diligence and do your part, and see if you can file an EEO without that diagnosis. Most of the time, we can find a way to do that. You just got to look at the requirements needed to even file an EEO. I will say this. Instead of a redress, I'd take it straight to a formal complaint, and you got to let them know that otherwise it will go to redress, which most of the time is a waste of fucking time. I say most of the time because it is still documented, and it's still a documentation trail of what you just did. Now, remember, though, keep all the documentation from this, emails, calls, everything, well documented and kept for your own personal records should you need to pull them out at a later time to show everything you have done up to this point with your situation. And remember, when you go into an EEO mediation, any notes taken during that meeting have to be turned in and destroyed So remember to document everything that was said in that meeting once you leave while it's fresh in your mind, and keep that with all your other documentation at home. Another thing you could do is contact your congressman or congresswoman and make them aware of the situation. This may not do much, but here's what it will do. It will have your congressman or congresswoman constituents send out an inquiry to your agency. Now, I know it's a lot to do, but trust me, this will come in handy later should you need it. Now, this could do a few things. It will, one, let your agency and local management know that you took that action, made Congress aware, and will not sit idly by while being mistreated like this and disrespected like this. And it could change the way you are being treated by your local management. Now, on the flip side of that, it could also put a bigger target on your back as well. But at this point, who the fuck cares? Because you made up your mind that you will not tolerate being treated like this no more. And you shouldn't have to, right? I mean, plus I see it as another avenue that you have documented. And let's be honest here, if you are in the Postal Service, you will need all this documentation at some point. So the more we have, the better off we are later. That's the point I'm trying to make there. So, of course, the most common sense of resource to use, and perhaps should be the first one, and I should have started with this one, but it should be any kind of grievance or grievances that your union can help you file against management. Now, I know a lot of you out there, your union representation is non-existent, and you're left alone to fend for yourself. Still, if you can, try to get union representation to help you file a grievance. Whatever union rep, it could be someone else from a different office for that matter, if yours is non-existent. You can call national, maybe they might help you. But try and get it done, because this creates a trail of evidence as well. And again, you want to keep all the documentation, a copy of everything, right? Because as we know, management will more than likely keep on mistreating you. So again, just as I said earlier, document everything, get copies of everything, and keep them somewhere at home should you need to pull any or all documentation regarding the misconduct from management at a later time. Again, management will continuously violate the contract and doesn't care about how you fucking feel, doesn't care about your feelings or your health. They don't care how they treat you. They care more about meeting their numbers and productivity than they do you. Always remember that. In saying that, though, I do want to say again, just as I always do, there are a few great people out there in management. And again, we want to thank you for how you treat us, because you are the example of what a manager should do, and more importantly, how to treat employees. So thank you for that. But again, the majority do not do that, and the majority does not fucking care one bit. Now, up to this point, we talked about filing grievances, EEOs, utilizing EAP, reaching out to Congress. And now I'm going to tell you this, which is also a very important resource to use, and that is filing a claim with the Department of Labor and OWCP. Now, in order to get your claim accepted, you will need to have medical documentation from your treating physician, meaning the professional who is treating you as their patient. So you will have to eventually seek help and set up an appointment with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, someone to help you and talk with you. Why, you ask? Simple. Because they are the ones that will ultimately get your claim accepted. They are the professionals who can write a narrative report that the Department of Labor, OWCP, will want. And as long as they meet the five basic elements for a claim to be accepted, with the fifth one being the most important, which is causal relationship, meaning that any diagnosis they give, they can link that to your job and during the performance of work, and it is their medical professional opinion beyond a medical certainty that this happened at work and was caused by a work-related condition or event, that will help you get the claim accepted. And with that, your treatment and any medication will be paid for, not by you, but through the Department of Labor and OWCP. Now, in order to file a claim, you first got to go to www.ecomp, that's E-C-O-M-P, so that's www.ecomp.dol.gov, and then you got to register to create an account. Now, once you do, log into ecomp, into your account, and file a new claim. Now, here is where I need you to fully understand something. A CA1 claim is an injury that happened over the course of one work shift. A CA2 is an injury that happened over the course of two or more work shifts. So which form do you think you are going to fill out? Well, it could be either one, depending on your situation, right? But in this particular case, let's say management has been mistreating you for a while now. Some of the people I've talked to over the years and from all over the country have filed CA2 claims in that exact situation and have gotten them accepted. Reason being, it's because it happened over the course of two or more work shifts. So here's where the common sense comes into play. If other federal employees did that and got their shit accepted for filing a CA2, do you think you should file suit and do the same? I'll let you answer that for yourself. But if it were me, I'd file the CA2 because it has been established that other claimants have done so and have gotten their claims approved. But again, we are talking about an injury that has happened over the course of two or more work shifts because management is mistreating you constantly in a toxic and hostile working environment, mind you. And this is relating to a mental disorder or illness, right? Now, you may be saying, well, wait a minute, Ron, you said it could be both. And I did. So let me give you an example as to when you file a CA1 with regards to a mental disorder or illness diagnosed from a professional. Let's say you're at work one day and you witness a murder, right? Or other violent crime in front of you while at work or on the clock, right? Or here's one that a lot of city letter carriers can relate to. You know, someone gets robbed. You get robbed for, you know, at gunpoint on duty for your arrow keys, right? Now pay attention here because how much of y'all are being robbed at gunpoint for your arrow keys right now? There's quite a few across this country. So in those two examples, it would be a CA1 because that one incident that happened over the course of that one work shift caused the diagnosis of said mental disorder or illness. Now, I hope you understand the difference there with those two examples and understand which claim form to fill out and submit regarding your particular situation. And I know some of you are still unsure, maybe thinking, well, Ron, what if both things happen? What if there was one incident like being robbed at gunpoint that caused me to have a mental disorder or illness, but now management is adding to it with their mistreatment when I am working following that incident? Well, in that case, I'd say you would file a diagnosis expansion report, meaning if you file a CA1 first, then anything after that pertaining to management, such as any other diagnosis from a professional treating you currently, you may have that added to the CA1. You may have your claim expanded to those other ICD-10 codes. But that may come down to what the Department of Labor and OWCP wants you to do. Now, I had a situation personally where I could have filed a CA2 later on or a diagnosis expansion report to add the other ICD-10 codes to my claim to get it expanded. Both were right. So I did both. And I put it into the hands of the Department of Labor and OWCP to make a decision on how they wanted to move on and accept it. You know, but by law, they had to accept it one way or the other. Now, I only did both because they were giving me issues with the denials. So I said, listen, by law, this is what you got to do. Here's the expansion. Here's the CA2. I don't care which way you choose, but choose one. The ball's in your court and let's keep it moving. So they chose the diagnosis expansion in my case. Now, again, I wasn't robbed at gunpoint or anything. My personal situation was different. I'm just using that as an example with the diagnosis expansion and CA2. I did both of those, even though I didn't have to. And they chose one that they wanted to go with. So there are times when there is no wrong answer. It's just what the Department of Labor, OWCP, wants and decides to do. And that's the point I'm trying to make. But if that's a serious question you have, then again, I'd reach out to, your union representation at a national level or a lawyer. You know, if you're going to your national union, maybe an OWCP director or one of their people that I work alongside of them. Again, I can only tell you what I did and give you the information here, but I am not giving you any kind of legal advice here. You got to do some things on yourself and educate yourself, do some research, make calls on your own in order to make sure you are making an informed decision as to what to do. Now, again, approved just doesn't mean filling out the correct form. That's just the beginning here, right? You're still going to need the narrative report from your treating physician or the professional that is treating you or seeing you. You know, as I said earlier, all five basic elements have to be met and causal relationship
performance of duty have to be established in the narrative report from your doctor. And I'll tell you this, if they say something along the lines of, I find to a higher degree of medical certainty that, or it is my rationalized medical opinion that, right? It's that language that is important when writing a medical narrative report for the Department of Labor and OWCP. So make sure that's done as well. It is hit or miss if your doctor will know what to write. So make sure those things are in the report. Again, five basic elements have to be met. And the language also has to be in there. Now, the language has to, again, I find to a high degree of medical certainty that, or you can put in there, it is my rationalized medical opinion that, you know, and whatever, right? So just keep that in mind. Those are some things that you need to do there when you're filing the claim. I'm sorry, when he's doing the narrative report. And in addition to that, I said about the five basic elements, which again are, those are time, civil, you have to be a civil employee. You have to have the fact of injury, the performance of duty, and the causal relationship. Those are the five things, the five elements that must be met before benefits can be awarded to any claimant. So keep that in mind along with the language. Before I close out the show, and again, I want to point out that how important causal relationship is in getting your claim accepted. Without it, you will get your claim denied. For any federal workers' compensation claim to be approved, the client must provide evidence of a causal factor, meaning they must have evidence that their condition was caused and/or aggravated by a work activity. Now, this can be tricky for OWCP stress claims. And if you fall and hurt your back at work, you have the physical injury as proof, right? Well, if your work supervisor verbally abuses you to the point to where you suffer from severe depression or any other mental disorder or illness, the evidence may not be as straightforward. OWCP will question whether your condition could have been caused by other factors such as personal problems or, you know, at home or even genetics at that point, right? This is one of several reasons why OWCP cases can be difficult to win, especially with stress-related claims. So make sure you and your treating physician or professional dot the I's, cross the T's, because without that causal relationship and all the five basic elements and that language, again, you will be denied compensation. And again, not to sound repetitive here, but here are the things you need to prove to be considered for a stress claim. First, the event that caused the alleged emotional reaction or stressful event must have taken place. Documentation as well as witness testimonies will help your case in that point. So again, if you can get a witness statement with anything, get the witness statement. But again, the event that caused the alleged emotional reaction or stressful event must have taken place. The stressful reaction must be due to a work event. That's the second thing. It must be due to a work event, which is outside of things like performance assessment, administrative directives, annual or sick leave directives, which all are routine and are not considered to be negligent or abusive since everyone goes through them. Now, the third thing is you must submit, and this is a big one, you must submit objective medical evidence that you suffered emotional stress, which can be tied back to your work environment or that one particular work event. Let me say that again. You must submit objective medical evidence that you suffered emotional stress, which can be tied back to your work environment or that one particular work event. And the last one here is, again, the five basic elements have to be met, and clear, objective, and definitive language is needed, even in that narrative report, right? We talk a lot about the narrative report. Stay true to the clear, objective, and definitive language, even when you write your personal statement. But you're going to need all that to get your claim accepted. Now, I know that was a lot to digest there, but I wanted to talk about this because I feel like too many of us experience toxic and/or hostile work environments or extreme stress, all of which could lead to a possible diagnosis of a mental disorder or illness. But again, you will never know if you have any mental disorder or illness until you go seek the help that you need. So please, please seek out the help should you feel you need it. Don't be ashamed. Don't be scared. And remember, you are not alone. Other people just like you are going through what you are. And just as you hear me preach about unity and how union members need to be more united rather than divided, The same principle applies here. In order to hold management accountable for their actions, we need to stick together. Write witness statements for each other where it's warranted. And more importantly, file your stress-related claims, as that is the one way we can spread awareness of the toxic and hostile culture and work environments we work in, especially if you are a United States Postal Service employee. People will start taking notice when they start seeing the amount of stress claims being filed. And that is needed for us. But more importantly, your health and overall well-being are top priority, and you shouldn't have to pay for it, especially when it's at the hands of someone else who caused this to happen to you. So please take care of yourselves. Seek out help when you need it. File the claims when warranted, and start not only helping yourselves, but also holding management accountable for their actions. Now, in closing, I'm not going to, say anything to management out there. I'm not going to say, anything to you guys. This episode is to federal employees, all federal employees, not just postal employees. But there's no quotes or messages today. But I will remind people that I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer, nor am I trying to give you legal advice of any kind here. I'm merely trying to give you some information and my own thoughts and opinions along with that information, and even from those who experience it themselves, who've gone through it and what they have done, so that you can make a better informed decision on what to do should you find yourself face to face with a possible stress claim. And I also want to get the word out that filing a stress claim, when warranted, not only will it help you, but it will help take a step closer to holding those accountable, such as management, for their actions, which are knowingly and willful, by the way, and to gain the attention we want and need regarding the toxic and hostile work environments we all deal with, in hopes it'll help raise awareness and create change that is well overdue for all federal employees, especially with United States Postal Service employees. That's all I got for you today. Listen, I appreciate y'all tuning in here. I just needed to get that out there. Too many people, if you go back and listen to some of these episodes here, I'm fed up. Lots of people are dealing with this mistreatment and this toxic and hostile work environment. But I feel that we neglect the mental disorders and illnesses that stem from that. So I just wanted to talk about it. I hope you guys gained some knowledge and information there. If you guys have any questions and you want to talk, please send me an email, drop me a line anytime, and reach out, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. But listen, I appreciate y'all tuning in here. Stay tuned for a lot coming up. We're going to have a special end of year episode for you guys out there. You thought Corey Walton was great, the interview. You thought the Kenny Hodge interview was great. You thought the Richie Ray episode was great. I got a big surprise for y'all near the end of the year for New Year's. So, but hey, until next time, stay safe, my friends.
That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends. Shade.